The rain report for September 9 will commence in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the assembled multitude of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with a September 9th rain report. Kit building is alive and well in amateur radio. Take a peek at any issue of CQ Magazine the past 9 years, and you'll see Joe Eisenberg, K0NEB's kit building column. Now, if you're a novice at kit building, the whole process can be a bit overwhelming. This is our second excerpt of two from a talk Joe, the kit building guru, gave about kit building basics at the 2017 Dayton Hamvention.
How many of you really cringe when you get a kit and you find them little donuts in the bag? Oh, yeah. But you know what? It's some of the most fun of kit building. Yes, you're going to spend a lot of time working on that one part, but it can be the most rewarding part of your kit building. I call it the trouble with toroids. A couple of tips on winding toroids. We count the turns of the toroid as to how many passes through the center of the donut. We don't count them on the outside, we don't count them on the top, we don't count them on the bottom, we count it in the middle. So every time that wire passes through the middle counts as one turn. Some of the wire that's supplied with toroids is enameled wire, sometimes called thermalese wire, that you can actually melt the coating off, and some of it isn't. A lot of kits will tell you if the wire that's supplied is thermalese or if it's not. If they don't tell you, the best trick is to do what I do with thermalese wire. And what I do is I take my soldering iron and I go on the lead and I put a big blob of solder on it and I turn that soldering iron up all the way. So I got the maximum heat. Yes, it's going to generate a bit of smoke. And I put that drop of solder on the wire and I draw it down the wire. Okay? When I draw it down the wire, what happens is, if it's thermalese, it will melt the insulation off, and as I go slowly, it also does what? It tins the wire. So now you're assured of making a good connection on the board. If you don't do that, it's not going to oscillate. It's not going to work. I'm going to talk a little bit about sorting the parts. Some kits you'll get may have only a dozen parts. You just put them on your cookie sheet. Okay, sometimes I just put them in order or that kind of thing. But a lot of kits have 40, 50, 100, 200, 300 parts. So what do you do with all those? Well, some kits are stage by stage. So what I use is a tackle box or a jewelry box that you can get at Hobby Lobby. And what it is just a plastic case with a lid on it, has dividers in it. And you put all your parts in these little trays in there. And by moving the dividers, you can resize it for what you need. Now, with a stage by stage, what those kits do is they usually start with the power supply. And so what you're going to do is you're going to build that one stage. So what I do is in cup number one in that thing, I put all the parts for stage number one. I put all the parts for stage number two in the next one, and so forth until I get down to the end. So usually what they do is they start with the power supply. Now, you don't want to get over 300 parts deep in a kit and find out that the 4 volts that's supposed to be on this one pin isn't there. You'd never know it. So that's why they do stage-by-stage kit building. You put together the power supply. You put the battery or the 12 volts or the 110 or whatever that's going in there, and you measure. They tell you to measure your voltage at all these different locations. If it's not right, you've only put in maybe 8 parts. So now you've already narrowed down what your chances of error might be. There's only a few parts. So once you've done that, and it works, now you go on to the next stage. And each stage is going to tell you, you need a headphones to hear a hum or a tone or something. Or you might need your meter to measure a voltage. Or you might need a scope to measure the waveform. All sorts of things that you might need. So you got to make a list when you're doing a step-by-step kit of each stage and its test equipment that you need. That way you don't get to the end of that stage and say, oh, I don't have my scope ready, so I'm going to go on to the next one. You don't want to do that. Because the more steps you do, the more chances you're going to have a problem. And we don't want to have problems, because once we built a kit, we're so satisfied that guess what we want to do? We want to build another kit, don't we? Okay, some kits have no step-by-step instructions. You get a bag of parts. So what do you do with that? Sometimes they'll have a particular component, and what it does is it might block your access to another one or make it more difficult to install another one. So they'll sometimes tell you about that, and that's about it. So what I do is I start with the resistors first, then the capacitors, then the diodes, and I kind of go up the hierarchy of parts until finally I get the ICs, the IC sockets, the POTS, the big stuff, plugs, jacks, connectors, things like that. So that's how we handle it when there's no step-by-step instructions. Nice things to have. How many of you have a variable voltage power supply that's got meters on it? That really helps. I like having both meters on it. I like having an ammeter on it as well as the voltmeter. And the reason is if my little CW Pixie kit is drawing about 2 amps, something's getting warm. It's getting really warm, and I'll probably be seeing the smoke. And you know, inside those black plastic things, there's magic smoke. Once you let the magic smoke out, it ain't gonna work anymore.
You're listening to some kit building basics from the kit building guru, Joe Eisenberg, K0NEB. We'll conclude his 2017 Daytonhamvention presentation in a moment. This is the Rain Report, available 24/7 from therainreport.com and via iTunes. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
A scope, an oscilloscope. I was just out in the flea market earlier this morning. I seen a lot of old analog scopes that supposedly work. Of course, it's a flea market, but they're selling them for well under $100. But there's a kit online, and if you look in my columns or email me, I'll be glad to send you the link. There's a kit for a digital oscilloscope for about $25. And it includes the surface mount parts already assembled. And it has all the functions of a Tektronix scope. It tells you the frequency of the waveform. It tells you the period. It tells you the peak-to-peak voltage, the RMS voltage, the highest voltage and the lowest voltage on either side of ground. It's fantastic. It doesn't go up real high in frequency. It's only about 250 kilohertz bandwidth or so, but now the newer ones are getting up to 1 or 2 megahertz bandwidth. And it's a great idea to have because you can measure your audio waveforms and things like that. And it doesn't cost a lot, and it's not that hard of a kit to put together. A meter. How many of you have been to Harbor Freight? And they even give them away now. There's $3. Sometimes they're free. You just tear off the coupon, and when you're buying a screwdriver, and they give you a meter. Okay, so there's no excuse not to have a digital meter. And all digital meters are generally high impedance, which means it affects your circuit a lot less than the old analog meters. A reference receiver. How frustrating could it possibly be to put together a receiver and hook it to an antenna and hear nothing? Just the static, the noise in your house, the washing machine going, but no shortwave broadcast, no hams. You got to have a reference receiver, and that reference receiver can be used to see if the band's open. Because I put together kits a lot of times, and those bands lately have been rotten. So if you can't hear it, you know that at least it's the band and it's not your receiver. So have a signal generator handy. That always helps too. So if you can hear the signal generator, but you're not hearing anything on the air, maybe the band's dead. The other thing I use the reference receiver for is for entertainment. Because when I'm sitting down in my basement and I'm building the kits, sometimes the washing machine is running behind me, sometimes the dryer is, sometimes the cats. What I do is I have my favorite music station on. I only caution people, don't put the talk shows on because all they do is tick you off, okay? And I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, left or right. That's what they're designed to do. So put your favorite music station on. I have my local classic rock station on, and it's running in the background. And that legal ID that comes up every hour is a great help to me because I might be winding a toroid or something and just deep into this kit. And I'll hear the legal ID, and I look up, and it's 4 o'clock. Then I start digging back into the kit, and I look up again. Oops, it's 5 o'clock. So that legal ID the radio broadcast station gives you really helps a lot. And like I said, propagation. You want to know if that band is open or if things are good, things are rotten, things are totally dead. Finally, I'm going to talk about standardized parts. There's a lot of kits out there that have options for different bands, for different modes, different pitches of side tone, all sorts of things. But they don't always supply you with the other parts you might need to make those changes or modifications. Or they might decide to change the choice of part that they supply with the kit to give it better performance. So it's great to have an assortment of capacitors, resistors, and so forth. I recommend looking around here. I saw at least three people in the flea market that were selling these things. And you can get a set of standard resistors. Quarter watt resistors are by far the most common that we see in our kits, because they're the easiest to work with. And so just get a set of standard resistors. That way you can say, hey, you know, I know this circuit. It's Colpitts oscillator. And you know that some of these crystals are working, some of them aren't. By changing the value of the capacitor that's in series or parallel with that crystal, you might be able to improve its performance, especially in different parts of the band. So having standardized parts, capacitors, resistors, so forth, of all different sizes. You can get the little tiny disc caps. You can get the tiny NPO caps. You can get electrolytics. You can get tantalum capacitors. You can get standard transistors and so forth. And you can make changes. I think with the Cricut kit, there was a whole bunch of people playing around with different components and getting different results with standardized parts.
And that concludes our two excerpts from a 2017 Dayton Hamvention talk by veteran kit builder and CQ columnist Joe Eisenberg, K0NEB, from Lincoln, Nebraska. To contact Joe, send an email to k0neb@cq-amateur-radio.com. That's k0neb@cq-amateur-radio.com. And if you know the composition of that magic smoke he mentioned, let us know. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2017 Rain. All rights are reserved. Now for all you kit builders and magic smokers, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com. Keep on hamming!